Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome to this week's show. We've got a lot of great stuff for you this week. Joan Luber, Rock and Roll for Any Age, the Sassy Sage, is going to be joining us to talk a little bit more about her book and start looking for some listener questions. We've gotten a lot of information from you, and it's time to start getting some feedback. Also, we're going to have a review of a game. Bill Snodgrass is going to be joining us, and live from the recorded from the floor coverage of the G3 Gaming Convention in Las Vegas. Slot machines have come a long way, and this is going to talk about that a little bit. Jeremy Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hi there.
I know you're here with us on the phone this week. We're looking forward to having you live back next week in the studio. And G, you're here too?
I'm always here. I'm ubiquitous.
Yeah, I know.
But hopefully you've been vaccinated.
So. Well, I don't. That's a whole other topic.
You won't get my ubiquity.
So we're going to do something new this week. We're going to start being able to take your calls live on the show. We're going to talk about that a little bit later here. How do you get to us? It's 503-766-6264. That's our number, 503-766-6264. Feel free to call anytime. Leave us your topic. One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be covering the Snafu show. What is that? We'll talk about that a little bit later. Give some details on these type of things. We're also going into the holiday season now and got some special content up and coming. Halloween, Thanksgiving, the holidays are right around the corner. And what do we have in the news this week?
Facebook to face lawsuit.
I'm not sure that's
Don't
news.
Don't they have
this
a lot of those?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm not sure this is news. actually, it is. It's a $40 billion with a B dollar lawsuit. And wow. What it's about is their misuse or alleged misuse of facial recognition data. And facial recognition is a topic that has not been without its controversy. It's something we've been seeing all over the place. And one of the things that goes along with this is, what do you do with the information you collect? There's a positive side to it. It's used to unlock our phones. In fact, Apple, in my opinion, has really implemented this well on the iPhone 11.
That's what, I have that on my phone.
Yeah, and you actually, gee, you can use it, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really easy to use. And the thing of it is that the bottom line of it is it does have its proper place. But privacy is a huge concern. And when you have situations where you're not sure or you don't know about the collection of this kind of data, it ends up creating some different problems. And Facebook, once again, is back in court, as they have been many times. But on this issue, it's a class action lawsuit. Again, it's supposed to be around $40 billion to see what they end up doing and what the court ends up deciding on this. So again,
how is Facebook getting my face? I mean, I don't understand that.
Well, Facebook, like most other platforms like that, has the capability to do video chat or have your picture or a variety of different things that can give it access to video data.
So if I do a video chat with you, it's capturing my
data. That's part of what's being alleged. It's capturing your face, and they're alleging recording things too. So that's an issue.
Wow.
What's next?
And to tie in with this, California outlaws facial recognition.
Yeah, again, topic not without its controversy, and it's been in the news a lot this week. Governor of the state of California has signed a bill to not allow their law enforcement departments, a variety of what that may mean, to use facial recognition data within criminal investigation. Again, the idea here is the misuse of it, but it also goes back to some problems they had. We're testing this out. They had set a camera or a set of cameras up in the headquarters down in California there in the Capitol building. And it identified something like 4 out of 5 of the legislatures as criminals, the people that were coming in and going out of the building. Now, it's obvious.
Maybe they were.
Yeah, I was going to say, it may be that the system worked just fine, right? So, But again, at the end of the day, this is not something that's considered to have reached its prime. And therefore, the state of California, it's not just California, the United Kingdom is putting regulations in on this and a number of other places around the world.
Okay. NordVPN hacked, and NordVPN is spelled all in capitals. So what does that stand for first?
Okay, NordVPN is the name of a company. VPN is virtual private network. Nord is the company name here. So that's what the acronym stands for. And what a virtual private network or a VPN is designed to do a couple of different things. From a security perspective, if you have a job, they may have a VPN where you connect to your network over a secured environment from your home. And it means that it can use the internet as the connection in between, but creates a situation where that network is secured. So you don't have as much of the likelihood for hackers to be able to get into that data. Now, in the case of Nord, it's a private system that you can subscribe to kind of guard or hide what you're doing on the internet. A lot of times this is used for downloading illegal movies and things like that, but it's also a platform that has its actual applications that are very much valid. And they have gotten hacked, which is a bad thing.
So the people who are protecting my data got hacked.
That's what this basically comes down to.
So they can't even protect themselves.
They can't even protect themselves.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah, it's a very bad thing, and it begs the question, you know, if you can't trust the people that are supposed to be keeping you safe, who can you, you know?
Yeah, I was dealing this morning with totally same topic, but with my service provider, my internet provider and all that kind of stuff. It turns out I have two accounts, and I'm talking to them about home security, and I'm saying, so you actually generated a second account on my account, and I'm going to trust you with my home security. Really? Why?
How did they answer that, by the way, just out of morbid curiosity?
They didn't.
I don't think so. We'll have to check into that, too.
This falls along the same lines as like the Equifax and those other people that are supposed to guard our data, and they're using it and collecting it. Okay. Jeremy?
Our last article for today is a smart speaker, smart spy.
It's been known for a while that putting a smart speaker in your home can create an eavesdropping scenario. And that is something that companies like Amazon and Apple and Google have been very much working to secure. And in many ways, they've done a good job at this. But now we're starting to have a problem with what I would call malware apps. So if you're not familiar with a smart speaker, any smart speaker can have functionality added to it. Think of it like an app. They use different names for it. It's a skill on Alexa. Anyway, these type of things allow your smart speaker to do something else. And they've been finding that, believe it or not, some of these skills add eavesdropping to the system that you don't know about. And that's what's going on with this type of a scenario. So what you want to do to avoid this kind of a situation is be careful of what skills you enable on your smart speaker. Most of them have been apps that do things like read the stars or that type of a thing. One was a dice roller or a random number generator, I think. But again, it's just best to look at who's making these, see if they're from a trusted place. They do seem to be passing on both Apple and Amazon's networks the security checks. So it's something right now that we want to be aware of. So that's the news for this week. Now, G, you have been doing radio for 500 years, even though it's only been around for 100. And in your day of radio, they used to have these things where people would dial in.
Yeah, you actually had to dial. Rotary dials were the thing when I was a kid.
I'm sure they were. And then
they went to push buttons.
No, push buttons. Oh, boy, we're getting into the 1960s
very,
here.
Very, very, very advanced.
So along with that, we've actually gotten a few callers, and this is something we do want to do. Now, the show doesn't go out live, so what we do is we take the callers 24/7. So you have something that you want to call in about, call our number 503-766-6264 anytime. And what will happen is you get to an automated attendant and leave what you'd like to talk about. And if you'd like to be on the air, we'll call you back, set up a time that's convenient for you, and record the call. And today we're going to be doing our first phone call.
A phone call. First phone call. It's a first.
Well, with no further ado here, let's move on and do it.
And our first caller is on the line. Celeste, welcome to User Friendly.
Well, hello.
And you have a question for us.
Yes, I do. I happened to receive a text from my cell phone carrier that I had used 70% of my data, and I'm only 1 week into the month, which I'm allowed, I guess, a certain amount, and I don't know how that happened. I always use Wi-Fi when I'm in the house and I'm calling, so I'm just... stumped as to why and how that happened.
Well, a couple of things on that. First of all, depending on what kind of a cell phone plan you have will determine how much data you have. And it's important to know that in most cases, unlimited doesn't really mean unlimited. And what they do and why you'll get the warning on that is to let you know that you're going through whatever allocation of data you have. And even if you have an unlimited plan, what they generally do is slow it down. So it'll keep working, but at some point it'll cut it off or really make it be a lot less. And so that's something to check with your cell phone provider, number one, to see how much information you actually have. The second thing is, depending on the carrier, and all of the big ones do this, there's an app on your phone. If it's Verizon, it's the Verizon app and so on that you can go into and see how much data you've actually used and what your data limitations actually are. So that's one way to be able to figure out what's going on. My best guess is that somehow you didn't get connected back to your Wi-Fi. and for whatever reason, it was using your mobile data, and then that's what caused the warning to come through.
I kind of suspected that might have happened because we were having trouble with our Wi-Fi in the house. So, yeah,
and that's very
that
likely.
That could have been.
And it'll default to the data connection if it can't get on the Wi-Fi for some reason. So it's just something to keep your eyes on. It's a good thing that your provider, whoever it is, actually sends the warning messages, because sometimes they don't. It's up to you to look at it. But in recent years, they've had a lot of problems with people complaining about just getting this huge bill and then having that happen.
Well, thank you.
Well, absolutely. Thank you for calling.
Well, hopefully that gives us some information on how to know if you're on Wi-Fi or if you're paying by the minute, because that can be very costly. Give us your calls, 503-766-6264. That's 503-766-6264. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Let us know what you want us to talk about. We take your phone calls, 503-766-6264, or social media, One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. Check out our podcast, theanswerportland.com. If you missed the show, it's a great way to catch up. Today, we have the sassy sage herself back.
Jill Yes, Huber, we do.
Author of Rock and Roll for Any Age. I had a chance to read your book. Welcome to the show, or welcome back to the show.
Well, so delighted to be here. You guys are so much fun.
We try.
We aim to please.
Yes, and, we do.
So like I said, I had a chance to read your book, and my mom actually did too. We both really liked it. It was one of those things you came away from it just feeling better about the world somehow.
Oh, I'm so delighted you did feel that way, because that's how I feel. I feel like there's so much potential, so much possibility that we haven't taken advantage of in many, many areas. And I hoped to have people walk away from that book and really feel good that they had a lot of possibilities that they could do in their own lives. And I hoped that I gave them some instruction on how to get there.
You know, rock and roll, you know, you talk about rock and roll at any age. I'm closer to your age than I am to Bill, so I'll admit, I'm 70. I still play drums in a rock band. I still play full court fast break basketball. I'm very active. I get people all the time saying, why don't you retire? I don't want to retire. You know, there's no need to retire. Why would I want to quit working? I love what I do.
Well, when you're loving what you do, you don't really work. You just have a good time.
So today you wanted to talk about how aging is perceived in this country. Is that the best way to put it?
I think that's great. It's interesting. We have things like racism and feminism that, you know, anti-feminism, all kinds of different isms, and we kind of forget about ageism. So many people are disregarded after they're 60. I mean, even my own son said to me at 71, Mom, why don't you retire? Why would I retire? I love what I do, just like you, and I want to keep going, and I feel good, and I'm teaching people how to get to my age and beyond and be able to live a really fulfilled life. And the big problem I see is this culture. It disregards and tosses out the very experience and wisdom that can really help make this world better. Because so many of us that are in the older ages, man, we've been through enough. We know that changes need to be made.
Why do you think that is? Why are we ignored? You know, because we're old fogies. A lot of people, probably the same thing. When I first met you, I didn't realize that you're older than I am. And a lot of people say to me, you know, gosh, I thought you were maybe late 50s or even 60.
Exactly.
You know, so it's a lifestyle that I've chosen to continue to be in the present, kind of. So why are we ignored?
I think there's a couple of things. I think we have a throwaway society, and it believes that power and brilliance belong to the young, and that they're very arrogant about their knowledge and energy, and they think they can always do it bigger and better. I have a friend her daughter came up to her and said, Mom, don't you think you need somebody to come with you when you do this negotiation? don't you think you really need help? Don't you need this, that? And she's going, hey, I'm really bright. I know what I'm doing. I can go and do what I need to do. I don't need anybody's help. And it's so interesting. They just assume that once we hit 60 or above, we don't know anything. That doesn't make any sense.
But hasn't it always been that way? I'm trying to look back to, I didn't think my dad was all that bright either when I was 18 or 20.
Oh, but that's between 16 and 20.
Yes. But you know, my kids think I'm very intelligent. They value my wisdom. So has it really changed that much? I mean,
I think there's both. I think that our elders were once honored and respected a lot more than they are today, and that people looked to them for guidance, and you know, and that was wonderful and extremely important. And then I don't know exactly what happened. I have some ideas about what happened after World War II and when that whole generation gave everything to their kids because they were so happy to have gotten through the Depression, they had gotten through the war, and now the economy in the U.S. really just grew rapidly. Yeah. So they did, most people did well, and they gave it back to their families because they realized the importance of that. Now, that was the age of my parents. So yeah, here—
and mine.
Yes, right. And when my generation grew up, I think a lot of us took it for granted and thought we just were entitled. So we just kind of took over and thought we were the best. And then our kids learned from that. And now they're looking at us without respect. And it's just, I don't know. That's just my sense.
What's the solution? Is there one?
Great question. Well, there's a lot of, it's going to take some time, but there's a lot of solutions, I think. First of all, and this is, of course, goes into my own field of wellness. We have a society that eats poorly. The foods are not great. There's lots of toxic chemicals in our environment. So people are really getting sicker younger. So now you have this older population that are really having physical problems. So if you have physical problems, you can't really go out and do as much. So if we can start changing our ideas of nutrition and wellness and trying to get toxic chemicals out of our environment, already we can improve the health of the generations. Now they'll feel better. Now they're ready to go out and start to become part of the community. The other part of that is we have to educate our kids and our grandkids. Maybe it's more Grandparents' Day. Maybe it's working with the schools and having mentoring programs. I do believe that the older generation has so much to offer that people don't even realize. And we need to take advantage of that by starting more mentoring, maybe doing town hall, town hall brainstorming to start to come up with how the generations can work together. And a lot of that, I think, really could start with the schools, because that's where we're really teaching kids and respect.
You know, we just have about a minute left. Tell me about your book. How do I get it?
Well, you get my book from Amazon. It's called Rock and Roll at Any Age, Joan Lubar, of course. And my tagline is a rebellious look at life, health, and spiritual wisdom from me, the Sassy Sage. And just go on Amazon and you're able to find it.
Joan, listen, thank you so much. And we hope to have you back again in a little bit here, because we get a lot of questions in. And what I want to encourage our audience to do right now is get your book, read it, and send in your questions, because I'm sure you'd be happy to answer them.
That would be awesome. I'd love to have just a question and answer session with everybody.
And we'd love that too.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Definitely.
So thank you, Joan Lubar, Rock and Roll for Any Age, available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. This is User Friendly 2.0, and we will be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me now is our reporter, Bill Snodgrass. What do you have for us today?
Well, Bill, Chaosium Incorporated sent me over the Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition starter set. It doesn't seem like much with its thin-assuming box set. You get 3 soft-covered books, a pile of handouts containing everything from blank character sheets to pre-made characters for teaching the systems to others, 2 full-color maps, and even more detailed handouts for your players to enjoy. It also comes with a nice set of easy-to-read green dice. When compared to, say, the Starfinder starter box, it can seem like a lot less, but it is a different type of game. Games like Dungeons & Dragons and Starfinder tend to use miniatures and have a lot of need for tactical combat focus, thus you get maps and miniatures for those kind of things. Call of Cthulhu is more of a social game, and a game where the theater of the mind is used far more. That is to say, your imagination. Some of you have probably already guessed what genre the game Call of Cthulhu is, and that is horror, and more specifically, Lovecraftian horror. It is a game of mystery, intrigue, stopping crazy cults, existential dread, and testing the sanity of your characters as they experience terror and mind-blowing secrets of the universe. Or maybe they just came face-to-face with a Shoggoth and the great ever-changing mass of colors out of space has taken its toll on their mind. Where I find this set to take the most drastic and honestly for the best diversion from how many games teach first-time game masters how to the mechanics of this game work, is that the first book of the 3 included in the set is mostly a solo game, in the style of the old choose-your-own-adventure books, and it walks you through how to make a character and how all those numbers work. The second rulebook is the basic game rules, being simplified and stripped-down version of the rules you would find in the full rulebook, and the third book is a fairly lengthy campaign to run for you through your friends once you make your way through the very insightful and helpful solo game. Now, that drastic part, what I mean is, a lot of game systems, you know, you buy the rulebook and you get into, and it's just like, oh, well, here's how you do this, and here's how you do this. This was set up very much in a way of throwing you right into the story, and you made up these choices along the way on your character sheet. And so it brought you into, well, this is why you would do this, this is this and this, and gave you references to the second book in case you needed them. The second book also came with a nice chart that would do some of the math for you, because the system runs on halves and fifths of certain numbers, so you have to take that number and divide it in half and put that in another box, and a fifth of that for it. It sounds complicated, right? But it's really not. Not compared to a lot of systems. This one is mostly just trying to figure out what to do with it. So I would say at the end of the day, if you're really looking for a decent game to play, go out and check this one out if you're really into Lovecraftian horror or just enjoy Lovecraft and horror novels in general. It works as a really interesting system even just for standard mystery games and things like that. Another game that was recently sent to me was the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game system by Paizo. Now, if you're like Pathfinder, and you're looking for something a little bit more fast-paced, or maybe you're just tired of a lot of the weird math in the regular game, you might give the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game a try. Now, I'm not big on deck-building games. Of course, I used to play a lot of Magic the Gathering back in the day. So it's been a little bit different here. You technically have a character sheet, which is a card, and you get a build a deck of cards that represent your abilities and such like that, and then you have an adventure that are built out of even more decks of cards and sets. To really explain the rules would take me quite a bit of time, and I'm going to be honest, if you have the chance to try this out or are interested, try your local friendly gaming store, because I had to watch a couple of videos on it myself. The rulebook, I felt, was a little bit troublesome in trying to explain how each system work, but it is, of course, an introductory, and perhaps it is, you know, better to learn in person from someone who knows, because I was really struggling to try and figure it out on my own, just learning it as a system. But at the end of the day, after about 2 or 3 games, I was really finding myself enjoying it. And there are campaigns, you can box sets you can buy, which add more cards, you can make random encounters and stuff. I mean, you're not just stuck to these campaigns either. And it runs in a very quick fashion with a little bit of a timer attached to it, too. So, again, that's the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game. So if you're looking for a card-building game, you might give that one a shot, too.
Bill, thank you so much. We'll be back after the break.
Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me now is Chaz Wellington, our reporter from down south. Chaz, hi.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good, good. And by down south, I don't mean Australia, but Las Vegas, Nevada.
Absolutely. The gaming capital of the world. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. And I understand you got to go to the G2E Expo, which is actually the name of it. I called it G3 in the intro. Tell us a little bit about the show.
Oh, Global Gaming Expo is phenomenal every year, and this year is no exception. You know, G2E, it's where gaming professionals, companies, attendees come to see, experience, and learn the advancements in technology concerning gaming.
And I know we got a game. Oh, I'm going to cut you off there because we actually got an intro from you from the show floor that goes into a lot more detail on that. So let's go ahead and go to that, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Bill, we're coming at you from G2E 2019 in the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. G2E occurred between October 14th and the 17th. Today's, of course, the last day. You know, G2E is the largest gathering of global commercial and tribal gaming professionals in North America. The products this year that were available have really come a long way. The education was fast-paced, actionable, and I was able to experience firsthand many of the innovative products. You know, a few of the key categories were esports, skill-based games, the advancements in facial recognition, which surprisingly, in some regions of the world, will be used to track how long the players play overall, and some regions set limits on how long their citizens can play. VR and AR, virtual reality, augmented reality, have really reached new levels. You know, G2E has hundreds and hundreds of companies here representing the advances of their technology and new products. And, you know, just a couple of those happen to be XSG. I'm standing right near DFI. They are motherboard, computer board, slot machine cabinet, and display manufacturer. Bravo Games, Synergy Blue. There's just so much to see here.
So, Chaz, how many years have you gotten down to the event?
Bill, this is my fourth year at G2E, and it's better and better every year.
And you got an interview for us, so what's the interview about, or who is it, actually?
Well, actually, it's Oscar Gallalt with Wind Systems International, and it covers a bit about their company and the technology they're in concerning the aspects of cybersecurity.
All right, we'll go back to the floor for that live recording.
Hi, Bill. This is Chaz at G2E 2019. We are at the Venetian Palazzo Sands Expo Center, and I'm here with Oscar Gallalt, Corporate Marketing Manager for Wind Systems International, and he's going to tell us a little bit about Wind Systems International and their products and how they're tied into cybersecurity.
Hi, good morning. At Wind Systems, we are very pleased to be at G2E showing our new solutions in the three product lines that we offer, which are systems. We have got Uyghurs Casino Management Systems, and together with our Gold Club Electronic Roulettes and our GameStar slot machines. So, and if we talk about the new products we are bringing for our Uyghurs system, we are showcasing in G2E very interesting new features for our Uyghurs CMS regarding players' loyalty, players' rewarding programs, together with some very nice business intelligence tools for the system. And also as something brand new, because we just launched that last week, we are offering also new service to all our clients, to all casinos around the world of all sizes, of a cybersecurity service that allows us to monitor the clients, the casino network, and just to make sure that we can detect and remediate any cyber attack or cyber threat 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. So this is like regarding the systems division. In the gaming division, as I mentioned, we have got Electronic Roulette Gold Club. We're presenting at G3 a new player a new system for roulette, which we call four-long roulette. This is a system for the roulette game based on the traditional roulette, which is targeting the numerous Asian players around the world. It's not for the Asian market. It's for casinos all around the world that has Asian players. And the difference is that, as I said, the game is based on the traditional roulette, but we are offering different betting options, and also the betting, the wheel, it's also with references to the Chinese tradition and to the Chinese elements of their culture that are related to the good luck. So that's why we're offering that, just to attract and to get the loyalty of Asian players. And the good thing is that in every single player position, the player can individually select either playing with the traditional roulette or the new Hualong roulette. So it's not necessarily that the whole machine needs to be in one or the other system. Finally, the last but not the least, in the GameStar, we are just offering a wide range of jackpots. We already got a symbol-driven jackpot, which is really successful, the Power Gong. We also had a Pyramid, which is a mystery progressive. In G2E, we are bringing new standalone jackpots, one for a multi-game platform, and the other one is a mystery standalone progressive jackpot, which is Colossal Warriors, which probably is one of the new solutions that is probably getting more attraction for our visitors.
Nice. Do you see in the future that, if it's not already, facial recognition integrated into the gameplay?
This is in our system. We are working in many jurisdictions, and we get adapted to the requirements in every market that we play. And yeah, of course, players' identification is something that we're really working hard on that. And probably new news will come shortly.
Okay. Oscar, I really appreciate your time, sir, and you have a great day and enjoy G2E 2019.
Yeah, thanks. Enjoy the show.
Yes, sir.
Well, Chaz, thank you so much. And just a real quick peek coming up here. I hear that you're going to be producing our first show for Veterans Day.
Yes, that's quite exciting and quite unnerving in a bit. But yes, I'll be producing the Veterans Day show, which is going to have a great spread of material and an interview with a gentleman by the name of C.P. Smith and a startup company that had been founded and is run by a veteran.
Well, that sounds incredible. We're looking forward to it. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Great show this week. Give us your topics. Give us your ideas. Ask us your questions. 503-766-6264. One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. Or check out the podcast at theanswerportland.com here on the new KPAM. So we've had something that has come up this week, and this next part is completely my opinion. I will start with that. But we went to the virtual reality show, and while we were there, we had to stay at a hotel. It actually ended up being two different hotels. And the second one was the Best Western in Roseville. Now, I want to start out by saying that I think their staff was incredibly friendly. The room was clean. And Chairman Gretchen, do you agree with that?
Indeed, yeah.
You know, and these teens on the road. But I did something where I screwed up a little bit. I left my coat at the hotel. And I called them and asked them, can I pay you to ship it back? And what happened is, and the reason I even bring this up is because the whole thing got on the Facebook and has gotten quite out there, which is, to me, very interesting. But there seems to be a policy at this particular location that if you leave an item at the hotel in order to get it back, they make it so complicated that you have to go through this process that actually ends up costing more than the coat would have and did when I bought it a few years ago new. It's going to be almost $60 to get it shipped back. So we had a little bit of a go-around, and the whole thing ended up right on Best Western's Facebook page. We talked about it on ours. A lot of people have shared it. So I just wanted to kind of touch base and let everybody know what was actually going on with that should you have seen it. Now, the very interesting thing to me here is, what is the right procedure? There seems to be no official rules or laws in point on how this type of thing is done.
I have no problem paying to have them ship it back. I don't think they should incur the cost of that. But I also don't think it should be such a complicated system that it's $60 or $70.
Well, it shouldn't be $60 to ship a coat back.
Yeah, and what it is they want me to ship them down a box, prepay postage, and do all this other stuff that adds on to what the actual postage price would be.
Well, maybe next time don't leave your coat.
Well, I mean, that's obviously idea number one. Yeah. But these things happen, and it just did, you know?
And for $60, you could drive down there and back.
Yeah. Well, for $60, I'm going to just buy a new coat. I mean, that's what's going to happen at the end of the day here. But I don't think I'm the only person that's ever left something at a hotel, you know? And so the next thing I'm doing is I've gotten in touch with the California Department of Consumer Affairs and their fraud division. And I'm filing a complaint on this.
Fraud.
Well, that's what they call it. I don't think this is fraud, but it's part of the same deal with all of that. To see what actually is the case here. Let's figure this out. And let's find out for consumers and for anybody that stays at a hotel and works on the road once in a while, what the reality of this is, or is it not? All right, coming up here on next week and future weeks on User Friendly 2.0, we're going to cover the Snafu Con. Jeremy, really quick, 15 seconds, what is Snafu?
Snafu is a Comic Con. The name stands for Situation Normal All Fudged Up.
I don't know if that's actually right. I think it's Sierra Nevada Anime Fans Unite, but it might be Snafu. It's
been a great
event every year, but it's something that the name sometimes applies. They will even admit to that. This is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.